And the time is 35 minutes after 8 o'clock. As promised, joined in the studio by Reed Parker, who is with the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad and the Forest Service, James Groff of the Discovery Center, and joining us on the phone is Tom Matisse, who is the avalanche forecaster for the City of Borough, to talk about an upcoming class. And is now, describe it to me. Well, first, just greet you. How are you all doing? Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
And
so there's a special Friday Night Insight this week at the Discovery Center from 6 to 8 p.m. It's early, so mark your calendars. It starts at 6 this week. Tom Matisse from the City of Borough of Juneau, who's on the phone with us now, is coming down to teach some avalanche awareness. And so there's also a field trip on Saturday that's full, but the Friday Night Insight is open. So, Tom, if you want to tell us a bit about what you're going to be talking about on Friday night.
Yeah, well, you know, this program is brought to you by the Department of Public Safety and the North American Outdoor Institute. I'm the avalanche forecaster for the City and Borough of Juneau, and I'm also the director of the Southeast Alaska Avalanche Center. So we're using this opportunity to do some outreach and bring some avalanche awareness to the communities around Southeast Alaska. We'll talk a little bit about the conditions that build avalanches in the mountains, the kind of terrain you want to avoid on certain days. We'll talk about the five red flags for understanding what conditions are leading to avalanche danger, and knowing when it's a good time to just be somewhere else. So we'll talk a little bit about terrain management. We'll talk a little bit about rescue, and we'll get into some of the tools that are used in rescue as well. So it's just a great opportunity for people who spend time in the mountains to learn more about avalanches.
Now, just over the human part of avalanches, of course, Ketchikan just last year, a young man suffered a tragic accident with an avalanche. I know that up around Juneau, it seems like I'm always hearing of people getting into trouble with them. Can you just talk about that part of the issue a little bit?
Well, most definitely. You know, avalanches can happen a number of ways, but it has to do with stress on the snowpack, and that can come via new snow, that can come via rain or high winds, and that can also be coming when you go out and step on the hill. So it's important to recognize the things that lead to avalanche danger and recognize how to operate a little more safely. You know, you can operate safely in the mountains every single day as long as you're not in avalanche terrain. So recognizing the terrain is a big part of that. And then also we'll talk about some of the tools that you can use to stay safe in the mountains. The number one tool is obviously you have to have a partner. If you don't go into the mountains with a partner, you have no ability to be rescued should something occur. So we'll talk about skiing with partners and using avalanche transceivers and probes and shovels should avalanches occur. But really the goal is to let people know how to avoid avalanches altogether.
Well, let's just talk. I know that you're going to talk about this, of course, on Friday, starting at 6, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Discovery Center. But just for the lead-in and for people who might need to know more, what's the main thing I want to avoid, say, when I go up on Deer Mountain on the ridge here in the wintertime? What kind of terrain am I looking to stay away from?
Well, you know, steeper slopes are obviously avalanche-prone slopes. The open areas, the bigger they are, the more they come down, so those are important things to look out for. But one of the big indicators is just learning how to read the signs that nature gives us. You know, there's five red flags of direct action avalanche danger. If you have increasing temperatures, if you have rapid loading from new rain or snow events, if you have high winds, those are all red flag indicators of times to stay away from those avalanche-prone slopes. As well as if you're seeing natural avalanches occurring in the mountains, those are just really good days to avoid being in the backcountry. So Mother Nature talks to us. We just have to learn how to pay attention.
So tell people a little bit. I mean, many people who've been up there know this. How do you recognize avalanche tracks if you're just looking up there kind of from a distance and realize that you want to stay away from there?
Well, you know, usually anywhere that's steep and open in Southeast Alaska has got avalanche potential. We get enough snow that even down into the lower elevations, sometimes if you're in a clearing, you could have an avalanche from way high on a mountainside come down and hit you. You know, one of the things we forecast for here in Juneau is for the urban environment and for Thayan Road. And sometimes in the spring, we might not have avalanches with even in 1,000 feet of sea level. But if we get the right conditions, those avalanches can start on the summit, and they can come all the way down to where we're at. So you want to learn to recognize slopes from 25 to 40 degrees in angle, slopes that are open. You want to look and see which way the wind's blowing and avoid the windward slopes, the lee slopes. So you just want to really learn how to recognize the terrain features and how to stay on the ridges, stay near the rocks, stay in heavy, heavy timber, and avoid those big open areas that tend to move a lot more.
Now, I know that one of the things with avalanches or understanding them, in my own experience, is really grasping the scale, because you can look at across at a slope and what from a distance looks like just a trickle of snow is actually a huge amount of snow in a localized area that is shooting down.
Most definitely. And, you know, one of those things we're going to talk about is terrain traps. Any place where the snow stacks up deeper than normal, gullies, funnels, places that you have a hard time getting out of, creek beds, those kind of things can all play into the big picture. One of the things that's important to remember is most avalanche fatalities happen on small slopes, less than 300 vertical feet. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a big open slope. It has a lot to do with the terrain features and not having a good escape route. So one of the things you want to be able to identify is where the safe spots are, where the dangerous spots are, and if you choose to go into those areas of questionable danger, you want to have a partner spotting you, and you want to be sure that you have an escape route planned, and you want to have a big picture before you even go into those areas.
Now, it seems to me one of the phenomenon around avalanches and rescue, you might have something to say about this as well, Reed, that's come out is with YouTube now and people snowboarding with like cameras on their head, that there's just more and more incidents that you see. I mean, my 8-year-old son can go and like be going through YouTube and thinking that's really cool. And these guys that are out basically chasing.
Yeah, staying one step ahead of an avalanche.
Has that made you guys' job much harder? Is there more of an incidence of people that are out there actually playing with them?
Well, you'll find that there definitely is. I think it has a lot to do with the explosive use of the backcountry in general, with the advantage of split boards and alpine touring equipment with skins on it so that people can climb and hike into the hills on days when they normally would have stayed home. They're definitely getting out there a lot more. I think the videos on everybody's heads, we just see that avalanches are occurring a lot more. But also the rescue equipment is getting quite a bit better. So a lot of people have a false sense of security. Well, I've got my avalanche transceiver, no big deal, right? Well, I think it's really important that people recognize that a huge majority of fatalities happen from trauma. So having a buddy and having all the right equipment is not going to save your life when you're wrapped around a tree. So, you know, we do see it all the time with the new videos, and there's a lot of stuff out there to learn from. You know, in the professional environment, when you see those ski and snowboard videos, a lot of those avalanches you see are very, very calculated avalanches. They know what depth the avalanche is going to break at because they've done snow pit tests and they've done tests on the slopes so that they know that they can get in an avalanche and they can get out of an avalanche. And it's usually going to be shallow, loose snow avalanches. If you see deeper hard slab avalanches, you have very little ability to control what's going on, and those tend to often be fatalities.
Yeah, we want to emphasize that, you know, even if you have the training and the beacon doesn't give you any more license to go into dangerous terrain, especially if you don't have a partner. But from the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad standpoint, by the time we get called, if you are caught in an avalanche, most likely we're just going to come recover you. That's the time delay is so long that you have to be smart going out there. The rescue techniques are better, but that doesn't get us there any faster. And especially with the advent of more powerful snow machines, there's a huge snow machine culture in this town. You guys are out there more and farther and faster and deeper than ever before. And so we would definitely want to emphasize snow machiners to come to this class. You're out there and more likely almost than the skiers and snowshoers in town to be caught in an avalanche.
Now that's interesting, because I usually think of it as the snowboarders and hikers or cross country skis, but actually the snow machines. Have we had a number of cases of that in Alaska?
We have. Mm-hmm. There was a woman who came to town a couple of years ago, Jill Fredston. She wrote a book about doing avalanche rescue and research in Anchorage, And a large portion of her book is about snow machiners who have been rescued. You know, if you're a snow machiner, you need the same tools that a skier has, a beacon, a shovel, a probe, and to know the rescue techniques to help your buddies out, and the travel techniques. So.
And I think it's important that people recognize, you know, that the tools should not give you that false sense of security. So many avalanches, the people die from trauma that you really need to avoid those situations. The snowmobiles today are big and fast, and often people get the false sense of security that maybe they can outrun an avalanche. Well, recognize avalanches can go over 200 miles an hour, and they'll go over mountains that are 1,000 feet tall and come down the backside. So when you see larger scale avalanches, you really need to be concerned with that. Snowmobiles are the largest fatality group in the backcountry, and it has a lot to do with some simple physics. You know, when I take snow, I can have some dry, light snow on the ground, and I can put a lot of heavy, wet snow on that. You know, if you take a pop can and stand it on the ground, oftentimes, if you're careful, you can stand on that pop can. And that's an example of a really heavy object on a really light object. But at a certain point in time, if I apply the pressure too quick, or if I apply too much weight, or if I drive over it with a snowmobile, it's going to break that pop can, and the avalanche is coming down. So don't let those things give you a false sense of security. Really learn more about the snow and learn when it's a good time to be out there and when's a good time to just really play it safe.
Yeah, it seems with the YouTube phenomenon, again, that many more of the videos are about the someone who's just lightly buried in the snow, and they dig them out, and they kind of like pop out laughing. And that's not the dangerous avalanche. You're saying the dangerous avalanche has ice in it. It's crushing people, pushing people. Am I understanding you right?
Well, all avalanches are dangerous, mm-hmm. And I think the reason you don't see the fatality videos is nobody wants to share them.
Right.
But they happen as well.
Yeah, the force and the weight of the snow is incredible. And the search for the missing snowboarder last year, the avalanche that caught him came down 2,000 feet from the ridge on Deer Mountain to the bottom. And so there's an awful lot of weight and an awful lot of snow, and it gets compacted. And if you're caught in something like that, it's mm-hmm. going to be months before you're found.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people get that other false sense of security too. Well, I'm in the valley and the avalanche starts way up there, I'll be fine. But I think it's important to recognize that avalanches can be remotely triggered from a very long ways away. You can be 600, 1,000, a mile away from a place, and when that pop can collapses, it sends a shockwave through the snow at over 200 miles an hour, and that can release an avalanche and come down and bury you, as well as releasing a remote avalanche that could go down the backside of a mountain and bury a group that you didn't even know was there. So there's a lot of dangers that are inherent that people don't truly recognize.
Yeah, that's news to me. You can release an avalanche from hundreds of yards away, way, way above you.
Yeah, I mean, right now, one of the videos that's been out here on the last week from the Utah Avalanche Center, they had a guy who was 800 feet away from a slope. He was walking on a flat surface on the ridgetop. They saw an avalanche rip out in front of him, propagated over 1,000 yards wide down to the Earth's surface. The avalanche was over 6 feet deep, and it went down into the valley below, and it was breaking trees off. So he, just by walking on the summit 1,000 yards away, could have killed somebody in the valley below him unknowingly.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So you think about like Carlana Lake Trail, where it crosses the gully just above the lake. You know, all the snow that pops off that bowl there ends up in that little draw. And so it's, you know, 20 feet deep in the summer when there's no snow. And I've been there in the winter after the whole bowl has come down and it's flat across. And if you were in that gully crossing on the trail there, when that happened, you know, you're toast. So mm-hmm. being aware of when an avalanche danger is high, even if you're down in the trees, is really important.
Well, let's talk about that just a little bit, just locally. Mm-hmm. And you have some sense just from the rescue and being out there. Where are the places that people tend to go a lot, just casually or unwittingly? I know I've been up in the wintertime, you know, hiking along on that trail and kind of bushwhacking up above Carlana Lake.
Yeah.
Where else? I mean,
well, I guess the big places would be Deer Mountain, of course, and not just the big face on the north side, but when you come up past the what we call the second overlook, the big flat overlook area in the trees, there's a small slope just above there that a search and rescue member was up skiing, and he got caught in a small avalanche, and it just came up to his knees. He was with a partner. His partner was able to come dig him out, but he was really surprised. He never would have thought, you know, in that 3-acre, maybe not even 3-acre patch, that an avalanche would have started. So Deer Mountain, of course, Carlana Lake, if you, that the gully crossing after you go past the lake and if you go up under the ridge, and then Silvis, you know, if you go up the Silvis Road, as you approach the lower lake, there's all that that steep stuff where there's no trees and there's no alder and nothing growing, and many, you know, almost every year, I would say, something breaks off of there and comes down. So, you know, if it's high avalanche danger, avoid the upper part of Silvis Road. Dude Mountain area, got a report last weekend that with all this new snow we'd had, all that light, fluffy stuff, and then I think we had, we had some heavy stuff on top.
Right,
and
the rain, yeah.
The rain on top, and so some folks went skiing up Brown Mountain Road, and just the side slopes on the road started collapsing on them. And so they thought, well, we're not, you know, we're not going off the road, essentially, because the cut banks from the road were avalanching. So, it can happen anywhere, but, you know, the main areas I would say would be Silvis, Deer Mountain, Dude Mountain, the upper portions of Carlana Lake.
Now, we can all use our own judgment, and you, Tom, in Juneau is the avalanche forecaster. Do we have a forecasting system here if we don't want to rely on our judgment or just want some opinion about how safe it's going to go be for one of our trips? What is there something in place here?
We don't have... Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Go right ahead, Reed.
Oh, I was just going to say, we don't have any formal system here. You can... Tom, I believe you have a website, and some of that information, you know, we're not in Juneau, but sort of the weather systems are similar, and so there may be some overlap with Tom's forecasting. Occasionally, KBRS, Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad, if it's super high avalanche danger, we'll put out a press release warning folks. I think we did that once last year.
So. But, you know, in the state of Alaska in general, it's just a really large state, and it takes a pretty concentrated effort to do an accurate forecast. So we don't have forecasting statewide, which is why these education programs are so vastly important. You know, while avalanche backcountry use has been exploding around the nation, avalanche fatalities have not risen that much. And that has a big part to do with the education that we're getting out into the communities. So, and I would say, don't ever look at my Juneau forecast and think you're learning something about where you're going that day in the mountains near you. It changes so much from location to location. Even one side of a ridge versus the other side of a ridge due to a wind can cause avalanches. So, and don't overlook those small terrain features. In 1988, my first year working on Mount Hood, the ski patrol director crossed a 30-foot tall bank above a gully. The bank slid. He went face down into the gully, and with two people on site, he didn't make it. So it's really easy to overlook obvious conditions, but it's really important to recognize the terrain traps and the terrain features that lead to those conditions. And we'll talk about the 5 red flags of avalanche danger on Saturday, and so that you can look at the weather and you can give yourself some idea if it's a good day to be out there. But what I can tell you is there's 5 red flags. If you're seeing natural avalanches, that's one. If you're going out into the snow and the snow's almost supporting you and you're collapsing through it from time to time, or you hear a whoomping, or in front of your skis you can see cracks shooting out, that whoomping, cracking, collapsing, that's two. If you've got winds from 10 to 40 miles an hour or even 50 miles an hour, that's three. If you've got new snow or rain, that's four. And if you've got, you know, other things going on, it's really important to pay attention to that. So the wind, the precip, the warming is another big one. In southeast Alaska, you know, it's really close to freezing a vast majority of time. In Juneau, our average temperature is above freezing. So when it snows, it cools off, and we get snow. And then at the end of the snow cycles, it tends to warm up. And that is a red flag indicator of avalanche terrain and avalanche conditions. So, you know, if you see any three of those fives.
Tom, it sounds like you just described our last week. I don't. Maybe it hasn't gotten warm enough, but thank you so much, all of you, for Tom Matisse and Juno and Reed Parker and James Grubb. And again, let's just repeat for people who are just joining us, there's a Friday Night Insight that's going to be this Friday from 6 to 8, and Tom Matisse will be there.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of calls this week, so get there early because the auditorium only holds 200 people, and I don't have such thing as standing room only. So.
And it sounds relevant to a lot of people. Tell your snowmobiling friends, and if you got kids or friends that that go out there a lot, this is a good opportunity to keep us all more safe.
Yeah, I would emphasize if you have a kid at home who hikes up on the mountain with their snowboard, you know, there's a lot of kids in Ketchikan who are invincible, like all of us were as kids, and so we'd love to see them out there.
For a while they're lucky.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, Reed. Thanks, James, and thank you, Tom.